Okay, imagine a scenario for me. You've done everything right.
Everything you were supposed to do.
Exactly. You followed the script, you studied for years, pulled all-nighters, drank way too much coffee, and you finally get the degree. So you sit down at your laptop, you're full of that, that terrified optimism every graduate
Oh,
has,
I remember that feeling.
and you send out not 5, not 10, but 100 job applications.
Wow, 100. That is a staggering amount. That's a full-time job in itself.
It really is. And we're not talking about shooting for a VP role here. We're talking entry level,
Absolute bottom rung.
the very bottom. And then what do you get? Silence. Or maybe a flood of automated rejection emails at 3 in the morning
Right?
because you finally read the fine print. And nearly every single one of those entry-level jobs requires 3 to 5 years of prior experience.
And that's it. That's the classic soul-crushing paradox. And for a huge number of people right now, that's not a hypothetical nightmare.
No.
That's just Tuesday.
It feels like a rigged game. And that's exactly what we're unpacking in this deep dive.
Yeah.
We're looking at research on what's being called the global youth unemployment crisis. But, and here's the interesting part, we're not just here to complain.
No, the focus is different. The sources we're looking at today are really compelling because they stop asking, what's wrong with young people?
Right. Why don't they want to work?
Exactly. And they start asking, what's wrong with the latter? The whole argument is that the system itself is broken because the bottom rungs have essentially been sawed off.
So our mission today is to figure out why the math just doesn't add up. How do you get experience if no one gives you a job?
And crucially, how some companies are starting to rebuild that ladder.
To unlock a whole new generation of talent. I love that framing.
It's about moving from a mindset of blame to a mindset of building.
Okay, let's unpack this
Okay.
because honestly, it feels like a logic puzzle designed to make you fail. Economists have a name for this, right?
They do. It's called the experience paradox. It's the catch-22 of the modern economy.
The catch-22.
You can't get the job without experience, but you absolutely cannot get experience without the job. It's a closed loop.
It feels like a glitch in the matrix or something.
The source material has a great analogy for this. It's like needing a credit history to get your very first credit card.
Oh, I've lived that. We can't give you a card because we don't know if you pay your bills.
And you say,
Well, give me a bill and I'll pay it.
nope, can't do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can't prove you're trustworthy until someone trusts you. And in the job market, this creates a massive structural barrier.
And it feels like it's getting worse. I feel like 10, 15 years ago, entry level actually meant we'll train you.
It was an investment.
Yeah. And now it feels like it means hit the ground running and please don't ask us any questions.
That's not just a feeling. The data backs that up. The research calls it experience inflation. It's a very real thing.
Experience inflation.
Roles that used to just require a degree, or sometimes even just a high school diploma, now demand that degree plus 3 to 5 years of relevant work history.
Which is just wild. I mean, who has 3 years of professional experience the day they graduate?
Almost no one, unless you were working a full-time internship while also studying full-time, which is,
Impossible.
yeah,
And financially impossible for most people.
exactly. It offloads the cost of training from the company onto the candidate. They want a plug-and-play employee for an entry-level salary.
So it's an equity issue.
A huge equity issue. But here's where it gets even more complicated. It's not just human hiring managers being picky anymore.
Oh no, let me guess. The robots are rejecting us.
You're close. It's the applicant tracking systems, or ATS.
Ah, the resume scanners. I've always wondered how much power those things really have.
Well, they often have the final say. Most large companies use these automated systems. They're programmed with keywords. So if the job ad says requires 3 years
And
experience,
your resume says zero.
the system often rejects you instantly.
So a human being never even sees your name.
Yeah.
You're just deleted.
That's right. You could be the most brilliant, adaptable candidate in the whole pile, but you're filtered out by a simple algorithm before the race even starts.
The source called it an invisible wall, which is such a terrifying image.
It is. It's an invisible wall built around the job market,
Yeah.
and it creates this sense of hopelessness.
Because you're literally just shouting into a void that software created.
Right. But that's just one part of the problem. Let's say you get past the wall, you meet the bot, you get an interview.
Okay.
There's still the issue of the skills gap.
I hear this term all the time, the skills gap. It always sounds like CEOs complaining that graduates don't know anything useful. Is that what it is?
We have to be careful with that definition. It's not that education is bad or that students are lazy. It's a fundamental mismatch.
A mismatch between supply and demand.
Exactly. The source had that fantastic bakers versus carpenters analogy.
Yeah. Yes. I love that one.
Imagine you spend years training to be an expert baker. You know sourdough, you know pastry, you're top of your class.
You're passionate, you're skilled.
And you walk out into the city, ready to work, and realize every single business in town is hiring carpenters.
So you're talented, you're hardworking, but you're a baker in a carpenter's world.
That's the skills gap. And here's the really important nuance. When we say skills, what do you usually think of?
Coding, data analysis, using AI, you know, the hard technical stuff.
That's what most people think. But the research shows that when employers complain about a skills gap, they're often talking about something else entirely.
What then?
They're talking about soft skills.
Ugh. I've always hated that term. It makes them sound fluffy, optional.
I agree. Many are trying to rebrand them as durable skills or power skills. We're talking about things like clear communication, teamwork.
Creative problem solving, adaptability.
All of those human-centered abilities. And to be fair to the universities, those are really hard to teach in a lecture hall.
Yeah, you can't really take Intro to Empathy 101 and come out an expert.
It's very difficult. A graduate might know the theory of marketing, but if they struggle to collaborate with a team, an employer sees a risk.
And I imagine the speed of technology just makes this whole thing even harder.
It accelerates everything. The World Economic Forum's Future of Jobs report points this out. Roles are evolving way faster than education systems can adapt.
So by the time you graduate, the software you learned might already be obsolete.
Exactly. A technical skill that's in high demand today might be automated away tomorrow. Which is why those soft skills, the ability to learn how to learn, are actually the most valuable.
But they're also the hardest to prove on a resume that a robot is reading.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's just recap. We have the experience paradox. We have the invisible wall of the ATS bots. And we have a skills gap where we're training bakers for a world that wants carpenters.
It is a perfect storm of systemic barriers.
It sounds impossible. But you promised this wasn't just about staring into the abyss. You said there was a movement to fix this.
I did. And this is where it gets really interesting. Companies are realizing they can't just wait for universities to fix this.
They have to build the bridges themselves.
That's it. And one of the most effective solutions is a total shift in mindset called skills-first hiring.
Which sounds great, but what does that actually mean in practice?
It means you stop using a university degree or 3 years at X company as your main filter. Instead, you focus on what a candidate can actually do.
So less about the pedigree, more about the potential.
Think of it as an audition. If you were hiring a guitarist for a band, you wouldn't just read their resume.
No, you'd say, here, play this song.
Can you play or can you not? Companies are starting to do that for corporate roles. They'll give you a practical assessment, a short project-based task.
Like, here's a marketing problem. How would you solve it?
Or here's a data set. Tell us what you see.
I love that because someone might not have the 3 years experience, but they could have a natural instinct for the work that just blows a seasoned veteran away.
And the data backs that up. The LinkedIn economic graph shows that when companies switch to this, they widen their talent pools significantly.
So you're not just hiring from the same few Ivy League schools.
Correct. You get diversity of thought, diversity of background, and the performance outcomes often improve.
It just makes sense. You're hiring for the future, not the past.
Precisely. And that leads to the second big solution, which is rethinking an old classic, apprenticeships.
Okay, now when I hear apprenticeship, I immediately think of hard hats.
Welding, plumbing, the trades.
Yeah.
And those are vital. But the modern apprenticeship is a completely different beast. We're seeing a huge rise in apprenticeships for white-collar, high-growth sectors.
Like what?
IT, digital marketing, healthcare, cybersecurity, data science.
So you could be an apprentice at a tech startup.
Yes. And the structure is key. It's paid, full-time work combined with structured learning. And crucially,
let me guess,
it's usually debt-free.
That's the game changer. In a world where student debt is just crushing people, getting paid to learn the job seems like a miracle.
It flips the whole model.
Yeah.
And for the company, it's gold. They get to train people to their exact standards. They're not retraining a baker to be a carpenter.
They're training a carpenter from day one.
And it makes the workforce more agile. Research from the OECD consistently shows this is one of the most effective tools for reducing youth unemployment. It just works.
Okay, so skills first hiring and modern apprenticeships. These sound great for the applicants, but I want to play devil's advocate.
Please do.
If I'm a hiring manager with a tight budget and tight deadlines, this just sounds like a risk. Why is this a smart business move and not just charity?
That is the ultimate question. If it doesn't make business sense, it's not sustainable. But the source material is very clear on this. It is not charity, it's strategy.
Okay, convince me.
Let's start with retention. One of the biggest hidden costs for any business is recruitment churn.
Right. Hiring someone, training them, and then they leave 6 months later. It's so expensive.
The data suggests that young people who are given that first meaningful opportunity, they have much higher loyalty to that company. They stick around.
So you're building loyalty capital.
Yes. And that leads to better succession planning. If you grow your own talent, they gain deep institutional knowledge. They just get the company.
That's a great point. Homegrown talent just knows how the place works.
And then there's the innovation angle.
Yeah.
Young teams bring what the source calls digital fluency. They grew up with these tools.
They aren't bogged down by this is how we've always done it.
Exactly. They don't just adapt to the culture. They shape what comes next. In an economy that's constantly being disrupted, that's a survival mechanism.
So by blocking young people out, companies are actually hurting their own future.
They're cutting off their own supply line of innovation.
That reframes the entire conversation. It's not help the poor kids. It's save your own business.
Precisely.
So what does this all mean for someone listening right now?
Well, it starts with a shift in perspective.
Yeah.
We have to stop seeing youth unemployment as some kind of individual failing.
Right. It's not about fixing your font.
It's about recognizing a systemic problem, from blame to building.
Yeah.
And if you're in a position to hire or even influence hiring,
yeah,
there is a challenge for you.
I like a challenge. What is it?
The next time you see an entry-level job ad, just ask yourself one simple, honest question.
Okay.
Does this role truly require 3 to 5 years of experience?
Or are we just copy-pasting what we saw somewhere else, using it as a lazy filter?
Exactly. Is that requirement a real measure of competence? Or is it just a barrier?
Mm-hmm.
Dismantling these walls starts with deleting that one bullet point.
It's about questioning the default settings.
Every time you do that, you're putting a rung back on the ladder.
And for companies that want to do this but don't know where to start, I can hear a manager saying, I want to help, but I don't have time to build an entire apprenticeship program.
That's where partnerships come in. The source mentions an organization called LinkUp Youth. They are a resource designed to help companies take that first step.
So what do they actually do?
They work on employment readiness initiatives. Basically, they connect the young people who are ready to go with the supportive employers who need them. They act as the bridge builder.
That's huge. It takes the intimidation factor out of it. You just have to be willing to hire.
It makes the solution actionable right now.
This has been so eye-opening. I think I just assumed the job market was efficient, you know?
Yeah.
But realizing there are these artificial walls.
Yeah.
It changes how you see everything.
It does. And it shows that efficiency and effectiveness are not the same thing. And ATS might be efficient, but it's not effective at finding the best human potential.
That's well said.
You know, there's one final thought from the research I want to leave you with.
Okay.
We talk a lot about future-proofing our technology, our supply chains.
Sure.
But we rarely talk about future-proofing our people.
What do you mean by that?
When a business chooses to focus on potential rather than perfection, they're not just filling a seat for today. They're building the workforce that will solve the problems of tomorrow.
Wow.
The young person you take a chance on today might be the leader who navigates your company through its next big crisis 10 years from now.
So the ROI isn't just for the next quarter, it's for the next decade.
Exactly. Investing in youth is really just investing in the longevity of your own organization.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up. I hope this sparked something for you, whether you're looking for that first break or you're holding the keys to the gate. Think about those invisible walls.
And maybe try to take a hammer to one of them.
Check the show notes if you want to learn more about LinkUp Youth or the data we mentioned. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.